You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
The third and final hour is already upon us. What a great night. What a great night of camaraderie with the men who I want to be buried next to. I mean, these are the people I want to live and fight and die with and spend eternity with. These are the best men I've ever known. The people who we talked with on this program on any given night, especially tonight here from Alabama, the heart of Dixie, the League of the South 2021 National Conference. You have heard from Brad Griffin. You have heard from Rick Tyler. You have heard from Sam Dixon, you have heard from Michael Hill and others, and we are not yet done. We're going to try to bring back as many of those names as possible for an encore. But now, closing the show tonight, helping me begin to close the show, the anchor. I'm not laughing at him. I'm laughing at what I see in the room. That's an aside. But it is a man who has had more electoral success than any pro-white, explicitly pro-white advocate in the last 50 years at least since Wallace, Dr. David Duke. His books have reached millions of people, a former member of the Louisiana State Legislature, former Republican nominee, not candidate, Republican nominee for United States Senate, former Republican nominee for the governor of Louisiana. That is, that's high stakes, folks. That's as big as it gets. And he came that close to winning. David, it's always great to have you back after all these years. You know, it was because of you that I met Sam Dixon. It was because of you that I met so many people who would play an integral role in my development during those formative years. You inviting me as a guy who had just earned, 19% of the vote in a state house race as an independent going against in a three-way race. Mm-hmm. You gave me an opportunity to come and speak that I probably didn't deserve. I mean, what had I done at that point except ran and lost as an independent for office? A lot of people had done that. But the people I met as a result of your invitation are still with me today. And in so many ways, I thank you for that. And I'm thankful for our friendship. And I'm thankful that you're here tonight. How are you?
I'm fine. I just am not quite ready to be buried with you yet.
No, we've got more living and fighting to do.
But one thing you brought out, it was pretty interesting. I didn't even think about it very much, but I actually was elected to office twice, once for the House of Representatives, once for a four-year term. And secondly, I was elected to the biggest Republican district.
And that was Tammany.
And that was at the ballot box. In fact, we became the biggest district in all of Louisiana that was Republican because of my chairmanship. And I'm not elected to the committee, but they... Believe it or not, to show you the difference in politics, I was actually unanimously selected by the other 13 elected candidates at the ballot box, same time as the presidential race, by the way. Every 4 years they do it, to be the chairman of it. And it's interesting because they always talk about how terrible I am and my issues are horrible and I'm racist, but it's quite fascinating.
They've called you that?
When I have the the audacity to have a public record. So we've made a lot of resolutions when I served in the as chairman of the Republican Party in the largest district in Louisiana, and it's a big place, as you know. And I also served in the House of Representatives, and I was a member of the Republican caucus on the masthead. And I passed the only bill by any legislative body in America opposed to the racial discrimination affirmative action. No other Republicans even dared to even get close to that in any state of the United States. And so it's kind of interesting. I have this voting record on all kinds of subjects. I served in the Health Reform Committee. I served on the and one of the criminal justice committees. So I was involved in the welfare system and a lot of studies there and a lot of issues. And I had a lot of ideas about how to lower the welfare birth rate. But it's really interesting to say, you know, They can't point to anything in those 8 years of public office that is really horrible, that probably that 80% of the people in the United States would agree with. And I think 80% of the people would agree with immigration has gone crazy. I think 80% of the people would agree with the idea that the best qualified person should get the job or promotion or scholarship, whatever they're entitled to. And I actually believe that by far the vast majority of European Americans want to preserve the European nature, the white nature of our country, and the preservation of all the values of our forefathers. I think that's perfectly natural.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. If the river is allowed to flow, it will lead to a logical depository, I guess is the way to put it. If our people were not repressed, if our people were not subjected to the fear of losing jobs and positions, they would advocate in their own best interest, I think. But in any event, and they did in those years in the early 90s when they nominated, you know, being nominated, being the Republican nominee for governor, that's a big thing. I mean, when you have the sitting Republican president come out and denounce you, and you would have won. I mean, they were we sat at Shoney's one night, late night, and you were talking about how they were going to all of these blue collar workers and saying, hey, if Duke wins, your job's out of here.
You're going to lose the job. The American Medical Association, which just so happens, just a coincidence, is headed by a Jewish person. They blackmailed the state of Louisiana. We had a medical convention scheduled in New Orleans. 120,000 doctors at the Superdome, which means many, many hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. And they had a big letter in the Times-Picayune, which is not used to be a local paper. The Times-Picayune used to support our local education and not having forced integration years ago. But now it's controlled by the Jewish Newhouse paper. Again, every time you go into our lives, anybody who's active in this country and active around the world knows that anytime you start getting into things like the SPLC, or you start getting into the Anti-Defamation League B'nai B'rith, or you start getting to the pro-immigration groups, like the largest, most powerful pro-immigration group in America, which is the American Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and they brag about the fact that they've been the leading group for opening our borders. When you look at, for instance, the attempt to impeach and do a Jew coup of against Donald Trump with the House Judiciary Committee. Now, look, I'm not making that up. It is the Judiciary Committee.
Somebody texted me last week. Why weren't you saying it with the proper enunciation?
Judiciary Committee. And who's that? Nadler. And then, of course, the Intelligence Committee. Why is it always these Jews are always involved in the intelligence and foreign relations? Could it be something to do with Israel?
Let me ask,
and something with the wars that Israel wants us to be in, or our boys to die in?
Let me ask you this before Israel. We go to the first break. I don't mean to cut you off or transition abruptly, sure. But this is just a total aside with only 60 seconds remaining. When we come back, I want to ask you how we change the narrative on Charlottesville, and you're to go back to the roundtable, and we close out the show tonight. But rumors about Trump running again, good, bad, and different, your take?
I don't know. I don't know. I think overall Trump was positive, not negative.
He showed people how to stand up to being called a racist.
Yeah, and I really believe a lot of politics is the possible, and I think a lot of politics is the mentality. And the truth is that white people have faced so many defeats, and the pro Semites. I call them Zionites.
It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. I mean, we saw this thing with the Robert E. Lee statement, and that's David's dog in the background. But
that's my attack dog. All of 5 pounds. But it's white. White.
Yeah, it's all white. It's so white.
Proves she has to be vicious.
All right. We got to take a quick timeout. I wanted to follow up with Trump's rhetoric versus the results. And the most confusing guy I've ever, maybe in history. We'll be right back.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Very, very quickly, everybody, let me announce to you what we're going to do. I'm going to have one more segment with former Representative David Duke. And then we got two more segments beyond that before we close out tonight. And what I'm going to do then is I'm going to give up my microphone and I'm going to bring in the speakers and the guests who have been featured tonight and let them have a round table with one another. Turn the program over to them. But we were having a fascinating conversation during the commercial break, David, with Sam and Brad and Rick. About Trump. I mean, here's this guy who gives this eloquent statement about Lee, but who offers so many mixed signals. I was saying just before we went to the music in the last segment, maybe one of the most difficult historical figures ever to read. Is he good? Is he bad? I mean, he's certainly saying things that nobody else, even Southern people, aren't saying, elected officials, I mean. And he certainly showed us how a man can stand up to accusations of racism without capitulating and apologizing. But, man, it's a difficult read. Very quickly on that, very, very quickly, because I want to get to your take on Charlottesville.
Well, many people have seen the Walter Mitty movies. He's like Walter Mitty in the White House. I mean, he's like he doesn't have his bearings half the time. But here's what I think about Trump. There's no question in my mind. I mean, a lot of people will say the conspiracy theorists, even though, by the way, Goldman Sachs just got convicted of a massive $2.6 billion conspiracy, international conspiracy, defrauding the Indonesians of half their money. And by the way, they served no jail time, so there's no conspiracies. But the conspiracy theory that the Jews actually wanted Trump to be president of the United States, I don't agree with that.
Your name was brought up so often with Trump during his campaign and presidency.
I guess they were trying to hurt him. But the point is, no, they didn't want him. They did polls of the media. 95% of the people in the top media positions were Jews. They didn't want him to win. The money, I mean, he goes to the Jewish Republican coalition, and he says, you are not going to give me any money because you want to control your politicians. Can you imagine any politician saying that?
But he was also slavishly pro-Israel.
Exactly.
That they don't like him saying positive things about Robert E. Lee, which he did even when he was president.
Maybe he had to know. He had to know he was doing a lot of things that he's got to know. The Jewish establishment, you know, wants open borders. He's got to know the Jewish establishment wanted the free trade positions. He's got to know the Jewish establishment wants all this stuff. But maybe he felt like, the only way he could possibly be president was to give the lavish support for Israel. I don't know. I mean, maybe he was trying to play this deep game.
Look,
all I know is this, is that his election, though, energized Europeans and made people put immigration at the top of the list, because all the other elections, the immigration wasn't talked about. It brought people the consciousness of this. And because of the Jewish thing with Kushner and others, and the corruption of Kushner and the family, it really did bring a lot of the stuff out to the Jews.
It's like scrambling a Rubik's Cube, but yeah. We got to get to Charlottesville.
Okay, but one more quick point, all right? One thing I really did enjoy about the Republican Jewish Coalition is they pointed out that Donald Trump was the most hated Republican candidate for president by the Jews of any other candidate.
Michelle Adelson liked him enough to give him
that. Let me get my punchline. that Donald Trump was the most hated Republican candidate of the Jewish people more than any other except for David Duke. That was honest to God. Quote from Mr. Finkel.
I believe it.
Finkelstein. You think I'm making that name up too? So let's go.
All right. Very quickly, you had a take on Charlottesville that I thought was unique, and that is what?
Well, I think the right, or if you call it the right, there's different ways to do it. Let's just put it this way: the racially conscious people, the people who are aware of Jewish supremacism and the Jewish domination of society, we have to understand something really clearly. We've got to stop this narrative of attacking each other. We've got to support each other. I believe the people who did Charlottesville were sincere. They weren't part of some conspiracy to get everything shut down. It was the largest gathering of people who were standing up openly and honestly in defense of the white race. White people, can you believe it? White people. Not the Jewish race, not the black race, but white people.
You compare them to Leonidas in a way.
Well, in a way, absolutely. They knew the Antifa had threatened everybody. They said bullets are the only cure for racism. They threatened to bash them and beat them and everything. They knew there was some degree of risk, and they went there anyway. They worried, a lot of people are worried about being doxxed and their jobs or positions. We know how that's going around the country. They came out. There were 5,000, and it was the first and probably biggest meeting in recent, since the Second World War, I believe, that openly presented the Jewish question and the racial reality of America. And that's what was being presented by the speakers. That's an amazing thing. And everybody that went to that rally was courageous. It's not their fault that Antifa was let in on purpose.
Several people in this room were there.
Well, of course there were. And it's not their fault they were attacked by the Antifa. It's not their fault they declared martial law and let all the communists stay in the streets. They had a torchlight parade, 500 people. It was beautiful with torchlight at Jefferson University, right? Jefferson, saying the Jews will not replace us, or we will not be replaced. It was beautiful. And it was spiritual, and it gave a lot of people a lot of hope. They had to stop that. They decided to stop that. The people who went there, they were young. They weren't experienced with some of this, but they were courageous. And to say that they were defeated, which they were, now we have all these people being sued, like our good friend and wonderful patriot, Michael Hill, Dr. Michael Hill. We have to understand that those people who went there were courageous. They were honorable. And, yeah, they, in effect, lost. They were prevented from having the rally and getting this message out to the world. A lot of them were locked up. But you know what? Leonidas, the great Greek king that went to Thermopylae, he lost too. But he was willing to sacrifice even himself, his life, for the Greek people. And that's exactly what saved the Greek people. It was Leonidas's stand at Thermopylae that gave the Greeks the will and the courage. And we have to stop doing the Jewish narrative, because that's what it is. It's Jewish media, as we all know. Jews run all the mass media, the biggest media conglomerates like Disney, like Comcast, like Viacom. They run all the social media like Facebook and Jugal. And that's just the reality of it, folks. We all know. They run the New York Times. They really do have a dictatorship. Well, they're one of the biggest predator banks on the planet, Goldman Sachs. It's like saying Jew. But it's – I'm not talking about
now
the candy.
Quit laying back. Quit pulling your punches.
Well, I'm not trying to use that vociferously. But by the way, if the Jews can talk about the Russians and they can talk about the Iranians, It's kind of interesting.
Russians were good in 1941.
But the Russians, actually, the Russians started getting pretty good, believe it or not, in the 50s and 60s, believe it or not, because they overthrew the Jewish communists, which murdered tens of millions of people. They started building Russian churches back in the 60s, believe it or not. You know, Putin built 60,000 Russian Christian churches. I mean,
Putin, good or bad, real or fake?
Well, again, he doesn't know everything I want, but he's also trying to live in the world. He wants his people to eat. He wants his industry to do what he knows. He can't say everything, but absolutely, Russia went against Israel in Syria. Russia went against Israel in supporting Iran.
I'll take the Russian Orthodox Church over anything we got over here.
Let me tell you something. The Russians don't allow this LGBT craziness, you know? They don't let people march around in jock straps and 10-foot plastic penises in the streets of Moscow. I'm sorry. They don't let the Pussy Riot or whatever they call it go into the churches and deface them. Like
I think the Cossacks were horse-riding
No, the Russians are on our side, and that's another thing we've got to watch out for. And this meetings like this are very important because it's people like myself and Mr. Hill and Sam Dixon, too, is one of the people that really speaks out a lot about this kind of principle. We've got to fight. We've got to stop fighting each other. We've got to fight the enemy, and we have to fight intelligently and smartly. And the narrative that all these people were so stupid at Charlottesville, no. The people who went to Charlottesville are heroic, and they should be praised. And eventually, when things turn around and we change this country and we save this world, they'll look at Charlottesville as something we'll be proud of. And the people who were there will say, yes, I was at Charlottesville.
An historic moment, no matter how you
slice
it. Sounds
like the Henry VIII speech, right? Of Shakespeare.
Easiest website to remember of the night, DavidDuke.com. DavidDuke.com. We'll be back the last two segments.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The world is marking the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. President Biden and former Presidents Obama and Clinton attended the ceremony at the National 9/11 Monument in New York City. Mike Lowe's daughter was on the first flight that hit the World Trade Center.
These 20 years have felt like both a long time and a short time. And as we recite the names of those we lost, my memory goes back to that terrible day when it felt like an evil specter had descended on our world.
Foreign leaders sent messages honoring the fallen in the attacks. Citizens from more than 90 countries were also lost on that day. There was also an event at the Pentagon. A bell was rung as each name of the 184 people who died was read aloud. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaroot. John and Chelsea Jubilee with Energized Health are regular guests on my show, sharing their breakthrough science of intercellular hydration. The results? People lose fat fast while still eating many of the foods they love. You can too. Plus, supercharge your energy and boost your immune system. You'll look and feel years younger. It's simple and natural without painful exercise. How do I know? Because I've only been on the program for a few short months, and I've already lost 25 pounds of inner body fat, and I've gained 10 pounds of muscle. But don't just take my word for it. Go to energizedhealth.com and check out hundreds of amazing testimonials. For all the details, click on the red button, watch the masterclass at energizedhealth.com. It's free, or cut to the chase. Join right now at 888-444-8895. Toll free, 888-444-8895. Mention War and get 40% off. 40% off! Go now to energizedhealth.com, 888-444-8895, or energizedhealth.com.
For the first time in the Texas mask wars, Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing six school districts that have defied Governor Greg Abbott's ban on local masking orders. He said the schools were doing unlawful political maneuvering. The governor's executive order bars local officials from compelling people to wear masks. Until this week, Abbott and Paxton have been on defense as several school districts, cities, and counties in this state's major metropolitan areas have sued over the order or just outright ignored it. Some 85 school districts and six counties have instituted mask mandates of some kind in defiance of Abbott's ban, citing the need to protect school children too young to get the vaccine amid the spread of the highly contagious Delta variant of COVID-19. Abbott had called on Texas lawmakers to send him a bill that would definitively stop school officials from requiring students, teachers, and other school employees to wear facial coverings. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different to close the program out tonight, and that is we're going to pair up some of the people that you've heard from earlier tonight and have them have a conversation with one another. And I'm sort of going to fade out of the conversation. And we have now with us once again Sam Dixon and Brad Griffin. And we'll let Sam fire the opening salvo. And I'm just going to be listening in on the headset to take them in and out of break. And we'll let them have this segment to themselves, Sam and Brad.
Well, I just wanted to stress that we are the when people talk about fighting or preparing or whatever, there's no thought here of anyone committing violence or trying to, quote, overthrow the government, end quote, or a, quote, insurrection, or end quote. I do think that America is going to go through a revolution, but that revolution is not going to be brought about by people like those at the meeting today. Revolutions in history don't happen that way. Revolutions happen when governments commit suicide. Lenin did not overthrow the Tsar. He really didn't even overthrow the provisional government. The Russian government collapsed, and Lenin picked up the pieces. The same in the French Revolution, and also in the American Revolution. All we can do is to prepare in terms of thinking through what kind of society we want to have in our future ethnostate. How that state will be ordered, how the elites will be chosen, the extent of voter participation in that state, who will qualify for citizenship. We need to be thinking through things like that. We need to be getting our message out, and we need to leave it to our enemies to destroy themselves, which they're doing.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, Sam. I totally agree. Governments fall, and we've seen this time and time again throughout history, when governments lose their legitimacy. When they cease to have the support of their own people. And most recent example of that, of course, is being the rapid collapse of the puppet government that we spent $2 trillion propping up, and probably more than that, in Afghanistan. That government had everything going for it. It had millions of dollars. It had the world's, you know, all the equipment that Trump complains about we left behind. But what it did not have, crucially, that caused the fall of the government was legitimacy. It didn't have the support of its own people. And that's why that government fell in 2 weeks. And even the soldiers who were getting paid weren't even willing to fight for it.
But our government has the support of the people it represents. It has the immigrants, the Hispanics, the Jewish community by and large, the Asians now. They pull them in with all this nonsense about anti-violence that they concocted and made up. It's got the blacks, it's got the diehard Marxists. So that's its base. And that base has not lost confidence. That base is more confident than ever, and it likes what it's getting. But empires also overfall because they overreach, like the Spanish Empire to Philip II. They overreach. And this foolishness in Afghanistan and the casual talk about another war, getting boots on the ground, overthrowing Assad, bringing democracy to Syria, fighting Russia, fighting Iran. One more war, and this system's really going to be on the ropes. It's suffering badly. It is really falling. One more war, they ain't going to be able to afford that. But they don't understand that, and they keep pushing forward.
Well, you know, that was the subject of my whole talk, that the United States hasn't been a nation state in generations. It is fundamentally a global empire that is based on the cornerstone of it being the dollar. And sooner or later, well, I mean, we saw even after Vietnam, like how many dominoes fell after Vietnam, how many dominoes will fall after Afghanistan, how many of our competitors around the world, like China, which is openly threatening Taiwan, the empire could rapidly lose credibility. And then as soon as that happens, the dollar's status as the world's reserve currency goes, and then the economic comfort blanket, which has held us together for so long vanishes, and then you have a real situation on your hands. Yes, the government, you know, has the support of the various minorities it puts up on the pedestal, blacks, Asians, Hispanics less so. Hispanics, for some reason, have, you know, in recent years kind of soured.
No, I think that's a statistical trick. They count Cubans as Hispanics. If you pull the Cubans out, the Spanish vote has to be at least 85-89% against us. And then they included Hispanic votes, people who are completely white, who were in California in 1848. The real question, which we get no data on, is how do the people that swam across the Rio Grande, how do they vote? And I have a good mind how they vote.
Well, I mean, yes, there's local nuances there. The Tianos in South Texas, I mean, are they really even count as... I mean, they see themselves as Texans because they've been there for hundreds of years. They're very settled people. But like I said, the United States is a marketplace, basically.
It is. We're all going to shop together in the Kmart.
And that's what holds us together. And even that, and the thing is, Sam, and I'm sure you'll agree that even that doesn't hold us together anymore. Shopping has become bitterly controversial. I mean, brands have to take a stand these days. And
well, Americans have lost everything. They have sacrificed everything. A Hungarian countess explained that to me decades ago, that Americans have lost their families, they've lost their culture, they've lost their religion, they've lost their language, they've lost their literature, they've lost their art, they've lost safety in their streets. They've lost everything except a very high material standard of living.
In one stack.
And she said, when that goes, she said, Americans are already bankrupt. But she said, when that goes, America will be the most bankrupt country in human history.
Yes. I mean, you've seen it. I'm sure you've seen all the horrible videos. I went on a spree posting them of the exploding homelessness crisis we have around this country, where people in places like Philadelphia, for example, live worse than even the worst people live in the third world. Strung out on drugs and looking like zombies. I mean, that's terrible. Even you can live in poverty in the third world, and it's not that bad.
Well, we have to remember that Duke got 60% of the counted white vote when he ran for the Senate in Louisiana. That meant he got more than the cast vote. And that was only with unemployment running about 11%. So this system has got to bring home the bacon. It's got to keep people's standard of living high. It's desperate to do that. That's why it gave $600 a week and extra unemployment during the COVID crisis. This system has never faced a real challenge since World War II and the Depression. It's when the systems are challenged that you find out how strong they are. And I have a good mind that when the tug comes, this thing's coming down.
Well, we've seen a lot of challenges the system has been up against lately. For example, the whole COVID crisis. And, I mean, people have various...
That's nothing.
It's various views on that, but, I mean,
no,
the world is perceived as a huge failure.
Well, but you know, other we've lived through things like the Spanish flu epidemic and the Black Death. It shows how weak America is. Yes, it's serious. I've been vaccinated, which will horrify many people in the room here and listeners. But I take it seriously. But you know, things like Vietnam, people have said when I mentioned that America has had no crisis, oh, we had Vietnam. Well, Vietnam was just nothing. We lost fewer men in the entire war with a population four times that of Great Britain, as Britain lost in one day in the Battle of the Somme in World War I, and Britain didn't fall apart. America virtually fell apart, losing 50,000 men in a bushwhacker war.
Americans don't really, I mean, at the end of the day, Americans don't really have it in them to maintain imperialism, I don't think. Even less than the British did. We're not as good as it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was just remarking to the room, this is great. Pairing you two together, this has been a fantastic segment of radio. Who needs me? We've got just seconds remaining, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this as a listener. Fantastic pairing, fantastic
the discussion
back and forth.
Continue.
You two guys. No, it really should, but final word to you, Sam.
Well, I would just note that our enemies have now shed the mask. They've shown exposed their fangs. They've shown their ass to the world, if I might be vulgar. And they now love the military. The Antifa loves the FBI. They never attack the FBI. The FBI never attacks the Antifa. They no longer believe in the rights of the accused. They no longer believe in the right to a lawyer. They're just everything they have condemned. There's nothing lovely or admirable about our enemies.
And I would love to give a shout out to our enemies right now in their in the time of their loss of what's called quote unquote credibility. Because I really do think that even 3 years from now we could come back, and I think the credibility might evaporate that fast at the rate things are going. I think it'll pick up from here on. So,
guys, if we've done a better segment tonight, I would. We've had some. It's been a great show, and it's been great guests. I really enjoyed the intellectual pairing there. I can pair, you know, a wine with a meal. That was the radio version of that. Sam Dixon and Brad Griffin, two intellectual heavyweights. And, boy, we have a room full of them. But that was a fantastic exchange. That is a quintessential TPC. That's what I got into this business for 17 years ago. For radio like that, I don't say that because I'm here and they're here. I say that because it's that's the truth. Sam and Brad, great job. OccidentalDescent.com. At Real Sam Dixon. I don't know how often Sam gets on Twitter, but he does have a Twitter handle, at Real Sam Dixon. He's shaking his head. He's not on there. But you can still follow him, though. We'll be back to wrap up the show with David Duke, Rick Tyler, and Dr. Michael Hill. Stay tuned.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
You know, I say this with a degree of sadness, but the show's better when I'm not a part of it tonight. Brad, no, they did a fantastic job. We're going to recreate that energy with you, Dr. David Duke, Representative David Duke, and Michael Hill. They're going to close out the show. But first, before we get to that, I want to give Rick Tyler a quick parting shot. Rick was our MC. He was with us during the first hour. Rick, just a quick 60 seconds maybe on the atmosphere here in the room tonight during the commercial breaks. I think the over the course of the last 3 hours, we've had a lot of good content that everybody could hear. But just the fellowship, just the being togetherness, just everything you've witnessed since we first went on the air, and a final word from you to the audience.
Probably the only way it could have been better, James, if we had had a video camera going in the room, and somehow we could have been letting the people be privy to that. That would have been even better. But just to wrap it up real quick, this was a tremendous weekend, a great conference, and I can't tell you how inspired I have been listening to all of the speakers, as well as listening to the interchanges on this program. And it's not better with you not on, but I tell you what, it rivaled. You being on. But James, you are top-notch, top drawer, without a doubt. You're the best, and thank you so much for what you do through the political cesspool.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you for all your children. I mean, you've done something that I don't think anybody else in this room or anybody that I know, and we always talk about, and rightly so, Sam Bushman and his co-host Kirk Crosby. They have 8 and 11 kids, respectively. That almost ties you as an individual. Fantastic. Rick, I'm shaking the hand of Rick Tyler right now as we speak. Fantastic guy. Great MC of this event. So let's bring back on Chief Michael Hill, who hasn't been with us for a minute. He came on with us at the top of the second hour. He went to go get a little supper, and now he's back. So, Dr. Hill, you and David Duke will close the program tonight. So we've got about 8 or 9 minutes remaining. The first salvo will go to you, and then you have this conversation with David, as Sam and Brad did in the previous segment. And just take us to the house in any which direction you'd like. What have we not covered tonight that you'd like to share with the audience? What's a parting shot that you can offer that will inspire the people going forward? Obviously, next month's a big month. Talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I'm just amazed to be here among this august crew. James, the host. I mean, to be sitting here with a guy like David Duke, who's, you know, what was it, David? 3 years ago that we celebrated your 50th year as an activist in the white nationalist movement. And, man, you're still going stronger than ever.
Last summer at Fort Pillow.
Yeah, exactly. And what an honor to be here with you, sir. I appreciate you.
Me too. Mike.
I mean, I have to pinch myself to make sure that this is really real, you know.
And I got to say, too, that this man over here on our left, I hate to say he's on my left, but
everybody is on your left.
but I've told him this before, you know, I've got two daughters. I haven't had a son, but if I had a son, I wouldn't dream of a son that would be any better.
Oh, I'm telling you,
Edwards.
Absolutely. That
if
would
I had
be good.
One,
and he's just
like
about
James.
The age to be my son and yours both. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I'd put on a birthday party for you, buddy. I've done it before.
That's right.
Well, I've got maybe I've got a girlfriend down the line that'll can make me a few more sons.
Yeah, maybe so.
Hey, Peter Bribble did it.
That's right. That's right. I may not be through myself. Who knows?
You never know.
But no, I'd like to say this. American Empire, thy name is hubris. And the Bible tells us that pride goeth before a fall. And if there was ever a proud entity, and I say that in a bad way, It's the regime here in America. They believe they can do no wrong. And as Sam pointed out, it's only going to take one more shock to the system, whether it's a war, a depression, a recession, or something like that.
If you don't mind, this is the segment for you and David to close it. But this it bears worth repeating, and I did say this earlier. We are not advocating or encouraging or hoping for any extra legal activity. The system will collapse on its own. Don't hasten the day. Don't go out and be a martyr. Don't go out and be the caricature. Do not advocate. Do not think of anything that will take you away from your family and your ability to provide. We are not advocating for any of that. We do not stand for any of that. We do want change. We do want to see a day when our people have a nation of their own on this continent. But do not go out and do anything that will make you the caricature that they present us to be.
Don't do
that. That bears repeating, and that needs to be said.
We understand that history has ebbs and flows and that nations rise and fall, and all of these things can and will happen, and they have happened, and they will happen again. But do not do anything that will take you away from your role as a husband and the father.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. I think we need to be kind of like Elijah. And we need to call out the priest of Baal, and we need to let them do their thing, and we need to let them fall. Because that they are in the process of destroying themselves right now. And all we have to do is sit back and watch the fall take place and pick up the pieces.
Yeah, and as we talked about today and we talk about every day, we have to identify the enemy. And the enemy is not the Russians. It's not the Chinese. It's not the Afghanis. It's not the Iraqis. It's not the Iranians. Frankly, it's the Jews. Not every Jew, but it's the Jewish elite, the Jewish establishment, the Jewish power structure that's driving this destruction, not just of the rights and the heritage of white people in the world, but of the human rights of everybody in this world. Dousing this world in degeneracy, destructiveness, war, theft, bribery, drugs, immorality, this destructiveness.
They are a people who only can destroy, David.
Well, you know, and there's certainly been some that have been decent and acted decently, and there are some that I really respect. But at the same time, we know what the organized Jewish power is. We know that for a fact, and we all know that in this room. And anybody in this movement who has other than a kindergarten so far education into what's going on in this country, everybody knows this. But if we don't start talking about it, there's no way we're going to ever win victory for it. And we have to understand this is the driving force, and unless we do that, they are dedicated to wiping us out, and they are. Folks, those of you listening, whoever you are, wherever you are, if you simply oppose, say, the Jewish Zionists because of what they're doing to Palestine or what they're doing to Europe today with their refugees or what they're doing in terms of the Hollywood media, whatever the reason you are, you must understand, and whether this is true, whether you're white, whether you're black, whether you're yellow, whether you're whatever race, the truth is, they are doing what they're doing to Europe to control the power of Europe and the economy of Europe and the military of Europe to advance not the European people's objective. Obviously, they're destroying the European people, but to control you as well. And if you really want to be free in your countries, wherever you are in the world, you have to understand the Jewish supremacy has to be broken. And this is true for white people. It's true for every people. And that's what we believe in, and we're not for oppressing anybody. We're also completely nonviolent. I've sponsored the protocol, the New Orleans Protocol, which was right-wing groups from around the country a few years ago, zero tolerance of violence.
I was there.
The time has got to come when, yeah, someday there may be violence. Violence is being thrust upon us. There's 550,000 white people every year hit, struck down by black violence in this country. They're sending us into wars, killing us. They're giving us drugs. They're destroying our families, and they're hurting other countries as well. A million Afghanis die, right? So the real enemy is the government of the United States, but we have to understand this is not our government. It's not the government of the American people. It's the government of a Jewish dictatorship, a Jewish oligarchy that controls. They control campaign financing. They control the big social media. They control big broadcast media. They control academia. They control this process. They control Google, which controls our minds. They control YouTube. And we have the facts. This is not some sort of canard, folks. This is reality. They have the supremacy, and they're trying to, and they're using COVID, actually, to try to transform the supremacy that they have in the media to truly a dictatorship, where they can just have direct rule over all of us.
Yeah, James, I'd like to take a last minute here to thank you for giving us a forum. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank all of you. Thank to all the guests tonight, Sam Dixon, Brad Griffin, Rick Tyler, David Duke, Michael Hill, and yours truly, Eddie Miller, was with us as well.
James, you mind if I call you son?
You can certainly do that. Should I call you doctor, representative, or what?
Just call me daddy.
You know, my actual dad never misses a show. So, yeah.
But, well, I don't want to make him jealous or anything.
But no, indeed, we are all in this together. We're all a family. We are a family.
and we fight for our past, our present, and our future. My God, what a great show tonight. The last two segments I have enjoyed as much as any I've produced in the 17 years I've been on the air. It has been such a privilege and a pleasure to just sit back and listen to great men talk with one another and to be able to broadcast that and to sit back and listen to that as a fan and as a listener. It has been incredible, and it's been incredible to be here. We're all here tonight because of one man, Dr. Michael Hill, and the League of the South. So, Dr. Hill, round of applause, everybody. Those in the room, it's
Thank you. Thank you all. You folks made this, not me. Y'all made it by being here. James, you made it by doing your radio show here tonight, and I appreciate it.
Dr. Michael Hill, everybody, League of the South. We'll stay in touch with him as we always have and as we always will. Good night, everybody. Godspeed. We'll see you next week if God wills it and Jesus tarries. Good night, everybody.